You're listening to the very first Midori House US election special, first broadcast on the 31st of October 2012, live from London and New York, here on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to a very special edition of Midori House, the first of our US election specials. From London, I'm Steve Bloomfield.
And from New York, I'm Aisha Spears. There are just 6 days to go until America heads to the polls, and Midori House will be there every step of the way. Over the next week, we'll be bringing you a daily dose of election news, views, and analysis from across the US and around the world.
On today's show, as the cleanup begins following Superstorm Sandy, we'll be analysing its effects on the race for the White House. ABC News correspondent Jeffrey Kaufman will be with me here in London, while Professor Rodolfo de la Garza from Columbia University will be with Aisha in New York.
Every day, our Washington correspondent Sasha Eisenberg will be giving us his guide to the swing states. Today, we kick off with a look at Virginia and North Carolina.
It's where you see the sort of new demographics of America at play in a way that favors Obama, and they're hoping that the state has moved demographically even farther in his direction.
Then we'll be checking in at Romney HQ in Boston before heading around the country to hear the latest from two key states, Florida and Ohio.
I do think that there's a sense of importance in Ohio, although I would say that I'm sure everyone across the country is paying close attention to this race.
And because the election doesn't just have an impact on Americans, we'll also be looking at its importance around the world. Today, we're heading to Korea.
Most people will think that it's better to have Obama in the White House than it is to have Mitt Romney. I think simply because Mitt Romney is associated with the Republican Party, which in turn is associated with George W. Bush, which is in turn associated with the Bush doctrine, which is the preemptive strike doctrine.
We'll also be joined by polling expert Julia Clark from Ipsos Mori, who will be giving us the first of her reports on what the polls are telling us. That's all coming up right here on our Midori House US election special, live from London and New York on Monocle 24.
But first, over to London to get the latest news headlines with Bill Bingham.
Monocle 24 News. US President Barack Obama is visiting the state of New Jersey to survey the devastation 2 days after the huge storm Sandy swept across the coast. He's to meet rescue workers and residents in Atlantic City with Republican Governor Chris Christie. The massive cyclone killed at least 50 people across the northeastern US, and millions are still without power. Some businesses and services reopened after a 2 day forced closure, and Wall Street is trading again. Governor Christie has announced Halloween celebrations are being postponed until November the 5th. There's growing concern there'll be food shortages in Haiti after Sandy's strong winds and heavy rain caused extensive crop damage there. Officials also say flooding could lead to a sharp rise in cholera cases. Sandy is being blamed for around 70 deaths in the Caribbean. More than 50 were in Haiti. India's southeastern coast has been hit by Cyclone Nilam, with wind speeds reaching 60 miles an hour. Nearly 4,000 people have been evacuated to escape the storm, which is buffeting the city of Chennai. Trees have been uprooted, but there are no reports of injuries. About 120 people are missing after their boat capsized in the Bay of Bengal. Survivors say many of those in the boat were Rohingya Muslims who'd fled recent ethnic violence in Burma. Local fishermen have rescued 13 people from the boat, which sank as it was transferring passengers to a larger ship bound for Malaysia. Protesters have been gathering outside No. 10 Downing Street in London to demonstrate against the state visit by Indonesia's President Susilo Bambang Yudhoyono. The President and his First Lady have been met by Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip and Prime Minister David Cameron. The protesters claim President Yudhoyono's government is carrying out oppressive policies in Papua. Sophie Grigg of the tribal campaigners Survival International says West Papuans have been tortured and killed for decades.
Indonesian government is being portrayed by the British government as being now this great democracy and helping in the war against terror, when actually those very people supposedly helping in the war against terror are inflicting great terror against their own people in West Papua.
Syrian activists say government warplanes have been bombarding opposition strongholds around the capital, Damascus, and in the north. Jets are also reported to have carried out strikes in the eastern city of Ghouta and Syria's second city, Aleppo, also in Marat al-Numan. A bomb exploded near a Shia shrine south of Damascus. Syrian opposition figures have been meeting in Turkey for 3 days of talks on transition in Syria. Radwan Zaideh, who is a member of the Syrian National Council and conference organizer, says the talks are aimed at forging a united front to stop the escalating conflict.
We are very pleased, actually. There was a common agreement about the issues we discussed, that should the army play no role in the future in the Syrian politics.
Greece's finance minister submitted the government's 2013 budget to a parliamentary vote as demonstrators flocked into central Athens to protest over further austerity measures included in the bill. The government has forecast a higher than expected budget deficit and a steeper recession. The economy is expected to contract by 4.5% in 2013, compared with a previous forecast of 3.8%. Archaeologists in Bulgaria say they've uncovered the oldest prehistoric town ever found in Europe. The fortified settlement near the modern town of Provadia is thought to have been an important centre for salt production. Archaeologists believe the town was home to some 350 people and dates back to between 4700 and 4200 BC. And that's the latest Monocle 24 news.
Bill Bingham, thank you very much indeed. It is 18:06 here in London, 14:06 in New York City. You're listening to the first of our Midori House US election specials, live from London and New York, with me, Steve Bloomfield, and Aisha Spears, here on Monocle 24.
London, New York, Tokyo. This is Monocle 24.
London, New York, Tokyo. Това е Monocle 24.
Londres, Nova York, Tokyo.
Londino, New York, Tokyo.
This is Monocle 24.
And you're back with Midori House with me, Steve Bloomfield, here in London, and Aisha Spears in New York. We were both supposed to be in New York City, but obviously weather has got in the way. Aisha, tell us about how the last couple of days have been for you in New York City.
It's been slightly odd, a slightly different New York City than the last one that you visited a couple of weeks ago, Steve. So yes, Superstorm Sandy hit on Monday evening in full force. I live downtown, our office is downtown, and our store is downtown. We still have no power down there. There's no heat and hot water either. So those of us with gas stoves are quite lucky, but there's no power. And it's an eerie sight. At nighttime, it's totally dark. There are no traffic lights, which means that the cars that are driving around today are driving quite haphazardly, and it's a little bit dangerous, I think, to even drive or even cross the roads. The subway is still out. Buses came back today. The bridges and tunnels have been opened again, but it doesn't look good. I think we're looking at restoration of power over the weekend at some stage. Some subway lines will be coming back on Thursday, they've announced, but a lot of them have been totally flooded. So we were prepared very well by the city. We knew it was going to be a big storm. People were evacuated, but it definitely was as big a storm as they had said it would be.
And we've been a little bit fortunate, haven't we, in our choice of studios. And we've just about made the cutoff line of where the electricity starts.
Indeed. So I was walking up from, I live in the West Village, and I was walking up and there was no, as I was saying, no traffic lights, no power whatsoever. And then I got to a street where I could see on 6th Avenue, there were some traffic lights, and it just happened to be traffic lights that lit up on 26th Street, which is where our studio is, that we're coming from New York today. Incredibly lucky. And so we're now here charging up our phones, replying to email and managing to put a radio show together. So we've been very lucky to use this studio on 26th Street.
Excellent. Aisha, tell us who you've got with you there in New York.
We are not alone here on this side, on either side of the Atlantic, actually. Steve, you've got a guest, and I have a guest. And joining me in New York is Rodolfo de la Garza, Eton Professor of Administrative Law and Municipal Science at the Department of Political Science and School of International and Public Affairs of Columbia University. Welcome. Thank you very much, Professor de la Garza.
Thank you.
And in London, I'm very pleased to say that I'm with ABC correspondent and regular Monocle contributor Jeffrey Kaufman. Prior to his London posting, Jeffrey spent 10 years based in Miami for ABC News as correspondent for Florida, the Caribbean and Latin America. So both hurricanes and presidential elections are no strangers to him.
Intersection of both. That's
indeed,
right.
Indeed. So welcome to both of you. Jeffrey, let's start with you. 6 days to go to the election. How do you read this?
Right now, it's Obama's. By a hair, but it's Obama's. If the election were held today, all indications are that he would win the electoral vote. The hurricane is only helping him solidify that. The issue of leadership is one where the polls show that Romney has gained increasing confidence from the American voter. What's Obama doing right now? He's being commander in chief, and he's getting very good reviews for it. That only reinforces it. The popular vote, you know, as most of our listeners know, but some may not, because it's very confusing in the United States. You don't get elected by a majority. You get elected by the Electoral College, which is 538 votes sent by each state, sent by states based on population. You need 270 to win. It is possible, and it has happened, that a candidate, Al Gore, won the popular vote and lost the election in 2000. We could argue about that. But nonetheless, it's happened in other elections. It is possible Romney could win with Southern whites in particular in very, very heavy Republican states, and he could win more than 50% of the vote and lose the Electoral College.
Professor De La Garza, in New York, when we look at the sort of the next 6 days of campaigning, what do you think are going to be the key issues before that polling day?
Well, I think there are a couple. One is, as was mentioned, Obama's role as national leader. Governor Christie, of hardcore Republican, has powerfully praised him, and that's got to help Obama in ways that those few independents out there will be impressed. It's not going to move Romney's people, and it's not going to move Obama's people, but it'll move a small number, it could move a small number of independents in some of the key swing states. I think that's the major issue.
We're seeing across the states that Obama seems to have quite a strong lead with Hispanic voters, but in Florida it's a slightly smaller gap that he's sharing with Romney. Why do you think that is? Why do you think in Florida there are more people who are happier to go with Romney?
Well, there's two things about the Latino vote that are essential to understand. One is that the polls undercount Latinos systematically. We've been doing this work on the Latino vote for almost 20 years, and recently, our findings of 10 years ago were replicated, and the same thing is happening. So the polls do not accurately measure Latino public opinion, so that when they say that Romney has X votes, say in Florida, I think it would be safe to raise the Obama vote a bit, because Latinos are more likely to vote Obama than the polls indicate. Now, why is it true in Florida? They've got a lot of very conservative Republican voters. That's been true since the Bay of Pigs. They used to be Democrats. They switched. And being astute, there was a vacuum in Florida when Latinos could become Republicans, because Republicans really didn't exist in Florida. So the Latinos became very effective in the Republican Party, and you see the older generation strongly pro-Republican. The third generation, much more likely to be ambivalent, voted for Obama the last time. And then
allow me to jump in just for one moment, Professor. Having lived in for a decade in South Florida, I think just to amplify the point you're making on those conservative Republicans, of course, with the Latino population in the U.S., you have about 40 million Latinos, 30 million the Mexican Americans. The next largest population, of course, Cuban Americans, and that's where they're concentrated in Florida. And they do not vote like Mexican Americans. The Latino population in Arizona, Nevada, California has an entirely different political orientation, as you've alluded to. But I think that the key word here to me is Cubans, the Cuban Americans. They have a very hard line on politics, obviously on Castro and Cuba policy as a bloc. It's softened somewhat. But that's why it's harder to crack the Latino vote in Florida, from my perspective.
Right. Additionally, though, remember, Cubans are the plurality. They used to be the majority of the Latinos. And the new Latinos coming in, a lot of South Americans, a lot of Mexicans, a lot of Puerto Ricans, are much more Democratic. So that the new generation of Cubans, that is the third generation, and these new Latinos are moving it over considerably.
Rodolfo, we're going to have to leave it there for now. Rodolfo, Jeffrey will come back to you shortly. This is the Midori House US election special here on Monocle 24. In a moment, we'll be getting an update from our team of correspondents across the US. Stay with us.
If you like Subways, not Subway sandwiches, if you want to know what makes a metropolis thrive or take a dive, and if you prefer the concrete jungle to the muddy field, then you need The Urbanist. Join me, Andrew Tuck, as we explore the urban landscape by tram, subway and taxi to meet the people out to make urban life even better. In this episode of The Urbanist, we're going to be looking at social housing in form and function, from architectural legacies of the 20th century to why recent approaches are being rethought. We're going to look at two projects taking place in London. We're going to talk to the editor-in-chief of Uncubed magazine about why some of Berlin's social housing has been named a UNESCO World Heritage Site. And we'll also find out how you build new social housing in Palestine.
Rawabi is positioning itself to be a sustainable city that has all the proper means for the creation of a healthy environment.
That's The Urbanist, premiering every Thursday at 1900 hours UK time, right here on Monocle 24.
This is the Midori House election special with Steve Bloomfield and Aisha Spears.
It's 18:16 here in London, 14:16 in New York City. Every day on Midori House until polling day, we'll be crisscrossing the US, catching up with our team of correspondents following the campaigns as they evolve. In a moment, we'll head to Florida and Ohio, two swing states. But first, let's speak to our Sasha Eisenberg in Boston, home of the Romney campaign headquarters. Sasha, we were talking a little bit earlier about how difficult Superstorm Sandy has been for Romney. How do they get back to doing what they were doing before, bashing Obama and trying to persuade people that President Romney would be a better guy in the White House?
I think by the end of the day that from a sort of messaging perspective, they'll be comfortable doing with what they were doing before. They'll obviously be up against a sort of contrast of Obama touring disaster sites and in this, you know, particularly useful, I think, bipartisan photo op with Chris Christie today. There's also just sort of a logistical problem that he faces in states on the East Coast, especially Virginia and New Hampshire, where, you know, both sides will need to adjust their get-out-the-vote operations for the fact that certainly through the weekend they're likely to have supporters and volunteers and voters that they want to turn out who don't have power or are some degree stranded, are disinclined to go out and or unable to walk neighborhoods and knock on doors and all the things you do in the last weekend before an election in the United States. And I think for Romney, there's a particular challenge because Republicans tend to be in more rural areas, tend to be more isolated, and are probably most likely to be the ones who are sort of most dislocated and face the greatest hurdles, literally getting to the polls on Tuesday.
Sasha, the Romney campaign office has had to backtrack a little bit about Romney's comments last year in New Hampshire regarding FEMA, I think especially because of so many people have been hit this over the last week and need the Federal Emergency Management Agency. What are your thoughts on that? Are they really backtracking? Did he really not say that he wanted to get rid of FEMA?
No, he said a lot of things during that period that he's backtracked on. This is just one that they got out behind. If there's been a storyline for the last 5 weeks of the campaign, it's that both on specific issues and on general presentation, that the Romney that sort of made it through the primaries is not the Romney that wants to be on the ballot against Barack Obama. And so we've seen on almost every opportunity had in those debates to draw distinctions with Obama on domestic policy, on taxes, on health care, on entitlements. He basically said, hey, I'm more or less in the same place that the incumbent is. And on foreign policy, on Iran and Afghanistan and the foreign policy debate, he tried to do the same thing. And so, I think that we have good reason to believe that Romney thought that being a sort of purist on small government and state responsibility worked in the primaries, and now he wants to shake that off a little bit in the general.
We clearly don't know who he is at all. Sasha, thank you very much. And we'll be hearing part one of Sasha's guide to the swing states later on in the show. Now let's head south to Florida, a state which Obama won in 2008, but where Romney appears to have the edge now. David Usborne is there for us. Hello, David. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. Thank you. So what are you seeing down there at the moment? I know that we've got Biden is in Florida, as is Romney. Who else is around?
Well, principally Romney. It's his first day officially, at least, back on the campaign trail after the hiatus of caused by the superstorm Sandy. I'm in Tampa. He was here a few minutes ago. I just watched him take off on his campaign plane. He's headed down south to Fort Myers and then to, I think, Miami. He's got three events in Florida at the moment. So both campaigns, he said, Vice President Joe Biden is here, both campaigns are hitting Florida very hard. I should say there is a New York Times CBS poll out this morning that actually put the president 1 point ahead in Florida. So I think Florida is all tied up, just as the nation is all tied up, just as Ohio is all tied up, Wisconsin, Iowa, Colorado. We are really in a very, very fluid situation right now.
David, Florida was one of those swing states which it was seen that Romney really had to win, because it's one of those swing states where it's one of the only ones where he's had a tiny edge over the last few weeks. If he doesn't win Florida, how bad does it look for him?
It's very difficult without Florida. There are 19 electoral college votes. You know, you need to get a total of 270 to win. It is the swing state with by far the largest number of electoral college. I think I said 19. It's 29, I'm sorry. 18 in Ohio. There is a sort of mathematical formulation where he could still win, but if he lost Florida, he would have to win in almost all the other battleground states. So it would be a tall order indeed. It was rather a small crowd that showed up for him here this morning. And, of course, what we're all asking ourselves is whether President Obama playing commander-in-chief, being president in the aftermath of that terrible storm, is somehow taking the edge off Mr. Romney's momentum.
David Osborne, US editor for The Independent, thank you very much indeed. We'll be speaking to you tomorrow, I'm sure. Nowhere has had more attention from the campaigns than the Midwestern state of Ohio. Barely a day goes by without a Romney or Ryan, an Obama or Biden popping by for a rally or photo call. And for good reason. Its 18 electoral college votes could be crucial in deciding who ends up victorious. A little earlier, Aisha and I caught up with WYSO news director Emily McCord in Yellow Springs, Ohio.
Things have been very interesting in the last week because of Superstorm Sandy, as they're calling it. In Ohio here, we didn't have too much of the effects, although there was some of that in the northern part of the state. But what's ended up happening is that both campaigns sort of had to walk a very fine and rather tricky line about how to campaign this week. Both the president and Romney suspended certain campaign events. Could be said that it's a political advantage right now for the president to do his job this week, and that's almost a campaign move in itself. But it's a risk for him, too, because he canceled several events in Ohio, and polls have been showing him neck and neck here. But it's tricky for Mitt Romney as well, because he doesn't want to look like he's campaigning or politicizing a disaster. In fact, there was an event that we had here in our area in Kettering, right outside of a suburb of Dayton. He was supposed to do a rally. He canceled it, and then he said, okay, wait, we're going to keep that campaign rally on, but we're going to instead have it to be a disaster relief event instead. His remarks were brief. He didn't talk about politics or the election. But one thing that's interesting to note, that in the past, he has argued that disaster relief should be as decentralized as possible, going more to private sector than the federal government. And while at the event, reporters did ask him repeatedly whether or not he'd be shifting funding from FEMA, and that's the government agency that handles disasters, and he repeatedly ignored those questions.
Emily, we all around the world are talking about how important Ohio voters are. Do the voters in Ohio know how important they are? Do they walk around the streets thinking, you know, what I'm going to do here on Tuesday, hopefully, if the election goes ahead as planned, is really going to impact how a lot of the world is run? Do they know how important their vote is?
I think there is a sense of that. People in Ohio do seem to really take it very seriously. When I go and I talk to people at rallies, many of them find it to be very important to vote, and it's interesting, you know, they have very strong opinions about even how they want to vote, whether it's early voting or whether or not it's voting at the polls on election day. In fact, I met an undecided voter yesterday, which was very exciting, and he was a young man, 18. This was his first vote, and he just seemed very excited. He said he felt very thrilled that both campaigns were looking to someone like him to get their vote. I do think that there's a sense of importance in Ohio, although I would say that I'm sure everyone across the country is paying close attention to this race.
And Emily, just finally, obviously the auto bailout is a big issue in Ohio. The auto bailout, which obviously Obama implemented and that Romney opposed. Romney's tried to hit back at that over the last few days, hasn't he? But it's sort of backfired.
Yeah, this is an interesting situation. Ohio auto manufacturing, something like 1 in 8 jobs are tied to the auto industry, so it is very important. And the president's campaign has been trying to sell that the notion that they're responsible for Ohio's recovery because of that auto bailout. And then Mitt Romney recently in a campaign speech last week made a comment that he read that auto manufacturer Jeep is planning to move all its production to China. Well, it's sort of an unusual move. Jeep Chrysler called foul on that. They said, the company says they're not moving all their production to China. Rather, they're expanding their presence there. And so, of course, the Democrats have jumped on this, and they're calling that their words are false. And so that has caused somewhat of a controversy here in the state. We'll see how that pans out.
That was Emily McCord, news director for WYSO Public Radio in Ohio, talking to us earlier. This is a U.S. election special on Midori House. I'm joined in New York by Professor Rodolfo de la Garza from Columbia University, and in London, ABC News correspondent Jeffrey Kaufman is with Steve Bloomfield. Professor de la Garza, let me start with you. What do you think was interesting there? What do you think the impact was specifically on Romney's false comments regarding Jeep and China?
Well, I think that if Democrats can get good ads out, and the ad I've seen is not as powerful as it could be, it illustrates the extent to which Romney appears willing to say anything regardless of its veracity. And if the Democrats get, in my judgment, sharper ads on that, that's got to affect that small number of independent voters.
Jeffrey, you heard earlier from David Osborne that there's a new CBS News, New York Times poll, which puts Obama just ahead in Florida. There's also one out from the same organization today on Ohio, which gives him a 5-point lead.
That's critical because that's outside the margin of error. There is no chance if that poll is correct. And that's a 5 points is a lot in the world of polling for Romney to win Ohio. The critical thing is here is the path to 270. 270 electoral votes cinches the presidency for you. Right now, if you break down the 9 swing states, according to the polls, Obama has 281 votes. The only state in play that could swing that's big enough. That's awarding Florida and its 29 votes to Romney. And right now, Obama has a 1-point edge in Florida. But the only state that can swing that right now is Ohio and its 18 votes. And that just seems completely out of reach. Now, what we've seen today is something very interesting from the Romney campaign. They have expanded their advertising into Pennsylvania, Minnesota, even Michigan. Now, you can read that two ways. Romney says that's because they're softening up. They are blue states. They are in Obama's camp, according to the polls and according to all the pundits. Romney says it's because they're softening up and they're within reach for him. The Obama camp says he's desperate. McCain did this in 2008. He's trying to find another route to 270 because he can't get there through Ohio.
Jeffrey, what do you think of the actual impact of these kind of weird scenes we're seeing of Chris Christie and President Obama hugging? And how do you see the Romney camp's reaction to the fact that, yes, President Obama has to be commander-in-chief at the moment, and they've got time to put these ads out there and to campaign in a way that he can't?
How do you show a cringe on radio? I mean, Romney's got to just be, I guess we could grind our teeth. This is just bad luck for Romney. It's obviously even worse luck, let's be clear, for the people who've been hurt and devastated by this, and let's not lose perspective on that. But Romney has completely lost the spotlight, and Obama, having learned from Bush, you have to remember, I was in New Orleans when Katrina hit, and I was there when the government failed to respond, people were saying, you know, where is FEMA? Where is the president? Americans remember the failure of George W. Bush, and Obama rebuilt FEMA, and Obama sure knows that what he needs to do is to act. And he's getting great praise for his actions, and that just kills Romney. Romney was losing momentum in the last couple of days prior to this hurricane, and this is just reinforcing that.
And I'm sure there's a tiny little bit of Chris Christie that does have half an eye on 2016 and how it might look if he's praising a Democratic president.
You're right, but the Republicans
half
are
an eye, half
but
an eye.
The Republicans are an interesting group, and you know they also remember when people have betrayed them, so that could actually hurt them. But and it was just a week ago that Chris Christie was saying devastating things as a Romney surrogate about Obama walking around with the lights off in the White House, fumbling for the light switch. So suddenly, Chris Christie is Obama's best friend, and it's going to be very interesting if Obama does win and Christie runs, just to see how Obama plays this out 4 years from now. But let's get through this election first.
Indeed. Jeffrey and Rodolfo, we will be hearing more from you later in the show. You're listening to a Midori House US election special here on Monocle 24.
Hong Kong, Zurich, London. Das ist Monocle 24. Hong Kong,
Hong Kong,
Zurich,
London.
This is Monocle 24.
In the next half hour of the programme, we'll be asking what the election means in Korea. We'll get the first of our daily poll updates, and Sasha Eisenberg will be back as he kicks off his guide to the swing states.
It's where you see the sort of new demographics of America at play in a way that favors Obama, and they're hoping that the state has moved demographically even farther in his direction.
But first, here's Bill with the news headlines.
President Barack Obama is visiting the state of New Jersey to survey the devastation 2 days after the huge storm Sandy swept across the coast. He's to meet rescue workers and residents in Atlantic City with Republican Governor Chris Christie. Governor Christie has announced Halloween celebrations are being postponed until November the 5th. There's growing concern there'll be food shortages in Haiti after Sandy's strong winds and heavy rain caused extensive crop damage there. Officials also say flooding could lead to a sharp rise in cholera cases. India's southeastern coast has been hit by Cyclone Nilam, with wind speeds reaching 60 miles an hour. Nearly 4,000 people have been evacuated to escape the storm, which is buffeting the city of Chennai. About 120 people are missing after their boat capsized in the Bay of Bengal. Survivors say many of those in the boat were Rohingya Muslims who'd fled recent ethnic violence in Burma. Protesters have been gathering outside No. 10 Downing Street in London to demonstrate against the state visit by Indonesia's president Susilo Bambang Yudhoyono. The president and his first lady have been met by Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip and Prime Minister David Cameron. The protesters claim President Yudhoyono's government is carrying out oppressive policies in Papua. France's highest court of appeal has overturned a ruling that cleared two policemen of involvement in the deaths of two teenagers in 2005. The teenagers were electrocuted while hiding from police in a substation in the eastern Paris suburb of Clichy-sous-Bois. Their deaths sparked weeks of rioting across France's deprived suburbs. The case will now go to the appeals court in Rennes in Brittany. Syrian activists say government warplanes have been bombarding opposition strongholds around the capital, Damascus, and in the north. A bomb's also exploded near a Shia shrine south of Damascus. Syrian opposition figures have been meeting in Turkey for 3 days of talks on transition in Syria. Portugal's parliament has backed an austerity budget that includes huge tax rises aimed at reducing the deficit. The bill faces a final vote on the 27th of November. And archaeologists in Bulgaria say they've uncovered the oldest prehistoric town ever found in Europe. The fortified settlement near the modern town of Provadia is thought to have been an important centre for salt production. And that's the latest Monocle 24 news.
Thank you very much, Bill. This is Midori House on Monocle 24, the first of our US election specials. And we're coming to you live with me, Steve Bloomfield, here in London.
And me, Aisha Spears, in New York. Now, every day on our election specials, we're going to be looking inwards across the US, but also outside to the wider world, asking what this election means in different corners of the globe. And today, we're off to Korea.
South Koreans are, of course, also keeping their eyes on the US elections. The two nations, which have been close allies since the Korean War in the 1950s, have many mutual interests in security as well as the economy. But some say these partners are too close and that the US has let Korea down. Reporter Jason Strother has more from Seoul.
The Hankuk University of Foreign Studies has something that probably no other campus in the world has, its very own Barack Obama Trail.
President Barack Obama Trail starts here.
I'm joined on the trail by Juan. He's an undergrad poli-sci major here. And also coming for a walk down this tree-lined path is Jaehee. She's a European Studies grad student. As the trail leads inside and down some steps, Jaehee stops to read a placard with quotes attributed to the U.S. president.
This school has one of the world's finest foreign language programs. Your English is a lot better than my Korean. So let me just say, 감사합니다.
감사합니다.
President Obama made this speech at the university earlier this year.
This is my third visit to the Republic of Korea as president. I've now been to Seoul more times.
His speech on the sidelines of the Seoul nuclear summit won Obama a lot of praise here at Hanguk. But overall, he's generally well-liked by most South Koreans. Jaehee says a little flattery has gone a long way for the president.
Obama, you know, made a remark about Korea in a positive way. Like, you know, we should follow the Korean education system or their healthcare system and so on. So people kind of think that, well, yes, I mean, the president of the United States think good about Korea.
Jaehee and Won aren't too sure what to make of President Obama's challenger in November's election, Governor Mitt Romney. Won says he watched the Republican candidate during one of the debates.
To be honest, I was not impressed with his treatment of debate or treatment of the issues at hand. Actually, his worldview worries me a lot. As a non-American living in a world where still America holds clout.
A return to the past is what concerns those keeping an eye on the U.S. elections. That's according to Jasper Kim, who heads the Asia-Pacific Global Research Group in Seoul.
Most people will think that it's better to have Obama in the White House than it is to have Mitt Romney. I think simply because Mitt Romney is associated with the Republican Party, which in turn is associated with George W. Bush, which is in turn associated with the Bush Doctrine, which is the preemptive strike doctrine. And I think many South Koreans and, of course, North Koreans might fear that same policy of preemptive strike could be used by a potential future Romney administration.
But Kim adds, if you look closely at both Obama's and Romney's policies toward North Korea, they really aren't that much different. It's just the perception of Romney getting tough that's making Koreans lean toward the incumbent. Americans aren't the only ones going to the polls this year. South Koreans will elect a new leader in December. Ruling party frontrunner Park Geun-hye's lead is slipping to her two liberal challengers, Moon Jae-in and Ahn Cheol-soo. Jasper Kim says if the opposition gets into the presidential blue house, some of the synergy cultivated under Obama and President Lee Myung-bak could be eroded.
They want South Korea to be more independent in terms of its decisions. You know, it's sort of a nationalistic play that South Korea should be independent. We're a big power now, so we don't need as much help from Big Brother.
That's exactly what some South Koreans are hoping for. Lee Tae-ho is Secretary General of People's Solidarity for Participatory Democracy, a progressive civic group that is often critical of U.S. policies toward the Korean Peninsula.
미국은 한국을 강력한...
America wants to have Korea as a partner in the region, but too many of the elites here blindly follow whatever Washington says. This is decreasing any sort of public debate about relations with the U.S.
Lee says one of the most unfair policies between the U.S. and South Korea is a free trade pact that began this year. He says it only hurts Korean manufacturers and workers. However, trade with Korea is not high on the candidate's agenda. While on the campaign trail, Obama and Romney have both taken shots at China at what they call unfair economic and trade policies carried out by Beijing. Analyst Jasper Kim says a potential U.S.-China trade war is looming.
And if that happens, then, you know, everything will become much more expensive. And also there'll be, you know, it won't be just with China, I think. I think it'll spill over. Every country will start to raise their trade barriers as well. And that means less countries will trade. Now, the net loser of that will be South Korea because it depends so much on exports.
In Korea, China is a concern for other reasons, too.
What you see reenacted is a Chinese policeman holding a gun at the head of a North Korean refugee in China.
Human rights activists hold rallies like this to draw attention to the forced repatriation of North Koreans in China. They say once sent back, they face torture or even execution. Pastor Peter Jung heads Justice for North Korea. He says President Obama and the U.S. in general have let him down. He says Barack Obama did not talk as much about North Korean human rights as Bush or the Republican Party did before. he has cared more about the North's nuclear weapons. Jung says he isn't endorsing Romney for president, but does think that North Korea will regain attention if the Republicans get back into office. How to handle North Korea is perhaps the most divisive issue in U.S.-South Korea relations. Many people here, including civic group leader Lee Tae-ho, say Washington only lessens the chance for peace on the Korean Peninsula.
Obama says he wants a world free of nuclear weapons, but he's been very focused on military issues in Northeast Asia, which have triggered more tensions here. He talks about denuclearization, but then he promotes the nuclear umbrella.
Lee adds that while Obama disappointed him, he doesn't think Romney is a better option.
We take comfort in knowing that the security we seek, the peace we want, is closer at hand because of the great alliance between the United States and the Republic of Korea.
Back at Hankook University, political science major Wan says that alliance Obama speaks of isn't as balanced to Korea as the president or Americans might think it is.
Just speaking from my heart, I think U.S.-Korea relations are too close, and we would benefit from a little bit of distance. I mean, we need all the cooperation possible on North Korea, for instance. But apart from that, we have to understand what the difference is between cooperation and having an alliance.
He adds, a true alliance doesn't happen when partners are unequal. Wan, like many other Koreans, says he'll have the U.S.-Korea partnership in mind as he watches the election results come in on November 6th. For Monocle in Seoul, I'm Jason Strother.
And we'll be hearing more from around the world throughout our election specials. Tomorrow we'll be off to Sao Paulo. Right now, though, I'm joined in the studio in London by Jeffrey Kaufman. He's still with us.
And in New York, despite the damage inflicted by Hurricane Sandy, Professor Rodolfo de la Garza from Columbia University has also joined me in the studio. Professor de la Garza, what do you think of, how do you think foreign policy will play out in this election? How did you see the foreign policy debate go?
Well, I think the debate was stunning in that Romney basically applauded everything Obama did and just said, me too. One doesn't know what Romney's going to do. His own aides don't know what he's going to do. He doesn't know anything about foreign policy. So that debate allowed Obama to shine compared to what he did in the first debate, which is ironic because debates normally don't influence elections. Obama's abysmal performance, for whatever the reason, gave Romney the chance to get back in the race. One of the spin-offs of that is you hear a great deal about how the Republican Party, which is so deeply invested with so much individual money, that they're getting ready to mount a series of lawsuits if the election is as close as it seems to be, to challenge the election. And that suggests a decline in American democracy, a decline in the nationality, what we stand for as a nation, and also plays to a very conservative Supreme Court.
Jeffrey, one area of foreign policy where Romney has tried to differentiate himself from Obama is within the Arab world. He's been very critical of what might or might not have happened in Benghazi. He's also been very critical over what he perceives as Obama's policy towards Iran.
There's no question that for a period, Obama has been vulnerable on Libya. The murder of the American ambassador and three other State Department employees was the message coming from the White House was confused. I was there at the time. It was confusing. It was difficult to move around. It was extremely dangerous. I understand that. But there is an expectation of coherence from the State Department and the White House, and they did grope a bit, and they were vulnerable. Romney got slapped a bit for exploiting it, but then he found a better tone. I think Romney, as Rodolfo has pointed out, Romney's weakest area is foreign policy. He can claim all the business credentials. He can talk about being governor. He can talk about turning around the Salt Lake City Winter Olympics. But he has no experience in foreign policy. The only thing to his advantage on that is that Americans don't really care. The fact that Obama won that third foreign policy debate really didn't have any influence because it's not there. This is really so much more about the economy, about leadership, about values and expectations of the role of government in American society. In the Arab world, Romney came out initially with a very much a Bush doctrine kind of approach of gunslinger, we're going to be hard on Iran, we're not going to take any of this. He's clearly learned because, as Rodolfo pointed out in that third debate, he backed off and he said, yes, yes, it's much better to talk than go to war.
Jeffrey, thank you very much. You're listening to a US election special here on Midori House. We'll be right back off this with our first guide to the swing states.
London, Tokyo, Hong Kong, New York, and Toronto. On October the 19th, Monocle opened the doors to its newest shop. Chock full of our regular goodies from Porter bags, Ettinger leather goods, 2013 Diaries by Marks, and Hakisan ceramic wine cups. Check out all of our collaboration products or flip through the latest issues of the magazine. Find the perfect gifts for Christmas, or just a treat for yourself. Visit us on College Street in Toronto or at our other shops around the world. And remember, you can sign up to our weekly bulletin at monocle.com to find out about all of the newest products as they hit the shelves.
This is the Midori House election special with Steve Bloomfield and Aisha Spears.
It is indeed the Midori House election special here on Monocle 24. It is 18:46 here in London, where I, Steve Bloomfield, am joined by ABC News correspondent Jeffrey Kaufman.
And it is 14:46 here in New York. I'm Aisha Spears, and with me is Rodolfo de la Garza, Eton Professor of Administrative Law and Municipal Science at the Department of Political Science and School of International and Public Affairs of Columbia University.
What a long job title.
I know, it's pretty good.
We'll be hearing more from both our guests in a moment. It's the first of our election specials here on Monocle 24, as we might have mentioned. Every day we're going to be taking you through some of the states that really matter in this race to the White House.
We heard earlier from our Washington correspondent and political guru, Sasha Eisenberg, and just a few days ago, Steve sat down with him to find out more about the swing states. Here they are with part one of our guide.
I'm Sasha Eisenberg, and here's Monocle's guide to the swing states.
So, Sasha, Virginia was won by President Obama last time. It was the first time in quite a long time the Democratic presidential candidate had won it. What are his chances of holding on to it this time around?
It's one of the states that really marks the sort of difference of the Obama coalition as opposed to other Democrats who've run in the past. And so it's where you see the sort of new demographics of America at play in a way that favors Obama. And they're hoping that the state has moved demographically even farther in his direction. So there's a small growth in the Latino population in Virginia, and there's definitely the sort of Washington suburbs, which are socially liberal, pretty moderate, are a place where Obama feels that he can do well. So this is moving very quickly into what will probably be one of the sort of ongoing swing states. I think Democrats think that it was not just a fluke in 2008.
But Romney certainly hasn't given up there. What are the reasons why Romney feels he could be strong in Virginia?
You know, it's been traditionally a Republican state, and there are large portions of the state that are socially conservative. And one of the things that makes Romney feel good when he compares his chances to the map in 2008 is that McCain seemed particularly bad at mobilizing sort of core parts of the Republican coalition. They were just unenthused about his candidacy. And Virginia is a place where Romney would think that he can just kind of get things back to normal.
Now, if we are to move on from Virginia to North Carolina, again, it's sort of a swing state, but Romney should feel slightly more comfortable there, shouldn't he?
Another traditionally swing state, the one for Obama in 2008, sort of both part of the sort of new Upper South that, similar to Virginia, has a sort of high-tech, upwardly mobile portion of the white population that lends itself, I think, to sort of Obama on social issues and a significant black population in the cities and some large college towns. That's sort of the Obama coalition. Then again, it's a in many places a socially conservative, rural, southern state. And it's one of these places where you get this, much like Virginia, kind of old America, new America divide between the candidates.
And is there anything in particular that suggests it's going to swing towards Romney? Is there any issue or any particular moment in the campaign that has really helped him in North Carolina?
No, I mean, I think that the Obama people thought that they would get a lot out of hosting that convention in Charlotte. And the sort of big symbolic failure was when they canceled the huge stadium event that would have had 80,000 people, most of whom were just regular people, supporters, volunteers who applied to get tickets as an exchange for their work on the campaign. You know, there's this threat of rain that day. Obama canceled it. And I think that it was seen to some degree as an organizing failure of the campaign, that they were unable to live up to this promise that they'd made. And the Romney folks used it as sort of emblematic of that Obama's high hopes for being able to sort of pull off a trick in the state for the second time. Obama won it by only 14,000 votes last time, so he has very little margin for error to repeat.
Sasha Eisenberg talking to Steve in part one of our guide to the swing states. Tomorrow we'll be taking you through Iowa and New Hampshire.
We will indeed. I think my favourite part of that isn't just the fact that Sasha knows everything, but the lovely little swing music at the start to go with his guide to the swing states.
Well done, producer Katie, for
exactly.
Swing music for the swing states. That's pretty good.
It works very well. Jeffrey, North Carolina is one of those states with a very high proportion, or certainly in 2008, of early voting. It was around 40% of voters in 2008 went to the polls before polling day. How has Superstorm Sandy affected early voting, and is that going to be much of a factor?
In fact, it was 56% of North Carolina that voted early
Wow.
in 2008. Before Sandy, 40% of North Carolina had already voted. That of the 2008 numbers, what we're seeing more and more in U.S. elections is early voting playing a larger and larger role. In fact, anywhere from a quarter to 40% of many states have already cast the voters have already cast their vote. So in many ways, what Obama's doing doesn't matter now, but what Romney's doing doesn't matter, but. You have to look at the numbers carefully because you tend to see a higher proportion of Democrats voting early. The issue of voters' rights is one that is a theme in American elections, and there are constantly efforts to tighten up eligibility, to require photo ID. They're seen as Republican attacks on Democratic voters, on the poor, on minorities who don't have photo ID, who don't have driver's licenses. The Democrats are using early voting as a way to get at these people and say, come on, if you can't come tomorrow, come the next day. And so they're mobilizing these early votes, and you're seeing a higher turnout, and you're seeing more and more of the election happening. Will Sandy affect it? Of course. Will Sandy delay this election? Definitely not. The election's going ahead next Tuesday. I think...
Come
rain or shine. Well, yeah, we've had enough rain, so we'll hope for no more of that.
We certainly have. Rodolfo, Jeffrey mentioned there that there has been a number of moves mainly by Republicans, although they say they're nonpartisan groups, to try and prevent some early voting, to try and bring in more voter IDs. What impact do you think that's going to have on voting?
Remember, most of the courts have nullified most of the most egregious dimensions of that. To the extent that people understand they can vote despite those early efforts, it won't have an impact at all. They could be impacted if they don't understand the laws have been changed, and that's going to affect primarily, I think, Latinos. For blacks, the vote is very different than it is for Latinos. So you've got a lot of organizations mobilizing the black voter. The Latino one is a little more underdeveloped, if you will.
You're listening to day one of our US election specials here on Monocle 24. This is Midori House.
Hong Kong, Zurich, London. Das ist Monocle 24. Hong Kong,
Hong Kong,
Zurich,
London.
This is Monocle 24.
Well, we're fast approaching the end of the show. It's 14:54 here in New York.
And 18:54 here in London. But before we say goodbye, it's time for our daily polling update. Each day here on our election specials on Midori House, we'll be checking in with a polling expert. And I'm delighted to say that today, Julia Clark, Vice President of Public Affairs from polling group Ipsos Mori, joins us on the line from Washington. Julia, welcome to Midori House. Let's get into the polling details straight away. Who's ahead right now?
Well, thank you so much for having me on. It's a real pleasure. And I can tell you right this minute, very hot off the press, our data that was published moments ago for the national picture shows essentially a dead heat, 47% for Obama, 46% for Romney, and a few more uncertain about how they're going to cast their votes. So that essentially, statistically, is a tie, I'm afraid. It's going to be a very, very close one in terms of the popular vote.
Julia, we've talked before about, is there a myth to the ability to debunk can we debunk the myths around elections that we can look to a certain region of a certain state or a certain house on a certain street and those people will tell us who will win the elections? Can we really do that, or is that just the media wanting to spin things?
Yeah, I'm not a big buyer of that mythology, as you say. I think that's the right word for it, mythology. This idea that there is some city or town in America that is a perfect microcosm of the American public. And, you know, so goes Ohio, so goes the election, right? So goes Springfield, Illinois, so goes the election. These sort of stories we tell each election cycle that are very convenient but sadly fairly useless in my mind. This is what we pollsters like to call sort of the special sauce that some in our profession and in politics more broadly, you know, bring to the table and pretend they have a magical wand that they can wave and tell you the results and predict elections. It's a little bit messier than that in reality. We need to look at polls across every single state. We need to look at the national picture. We need to look at what happened 2 years ago at the midterms. We need to look at what happened 4 years ago, of course, in 2008. And there is no sort of special sauce. It's really a long-term numbers crunching game. So I would agree with you that bubble is sort of burst. But I think there are a few important things to look out for as a pollster that I particularly look out for when I'm looking to predict the outcome of an election, and of course this election in particular. Turnout is going to be critical. Absolutely, as I believe has been mentioned already, the Republicans turn out more on Election Day, Democrats less so, but recent efforts in early voting have really been pushed forward by Democrats to get their voters to the polls in advance of the day as well as on the day itself. A higher turnout in this country benefits the Democrats because Republicans pretty much always vote. Democrats have a much larger base, but a lot of those people tend to stay home on Election Day. So the real task for Obama is to get people to the polls. And certainly Sandy, the storm, may be impacting on that, and we'll have to wait and see how much that impact will have in terms of early vote casting.
Julia Clark, Julia, sorry, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there because we're just coming to the very end of the show. But don't worry, we will have you back tomorrow for more. Julia Clark from Ipsos Mori in Washington, D.C., thank you very much for joining us. Jeffrey, very quickly, you had something you wanted to add on that, didn't you?
No, I think, though, I'm actually interested to hear what Julia says about the breakdown of the vote state by state, because it's not an election about popular vote nationwide. Mm. That is an interesting indicator, but it's not what this election's about. It's about who's going to win these swing states. 41 of these states, these elections are already decided. There are 9 in play, and they're the only ones that matter to the outcome.
Jeffrey Kaufman, thank you very much indeed. We'll have to put that question to Julia tomorrow. That's all we've got time for today. Special thanks to our guests, Jeffrey Kaufman here in London.
And to Professor Rodolfo de la Garza here in New York. Our engineer on this side of the Atlantic was the lovely Paul Ruest here at Argo Studios. My producer was Barrett Austin, and our brilliant researcher was Pauline Eiferman.
Here in London, thanks go to Ben Jay and Case Bilbao. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow. That's 1800 hours London time, 1400 hours on the East Coast, to bring you the second of our election specials here on Monocle 24. But for now, it's goodbye from me, Steve Bloomfield in London.
And me, Aisha Spears, here in New York.
Thanks for listening. Goodbye.